Hey, Starting Nine listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
This is your Twisted Kings, Taylor Lewan and Will Compton. Summer is right around the corner.
Nothing is better than grabbing a refreshing Twisted Tea cold on the rocks. It's got 5% alcohol. It is the perfect drink to turn up your summer. And you might be wondering, is this a sponsored ad? Yes. But the truth is, the boys, we love Twisted Tea.
Dude,
go buy it, go drink it, drink responsibly, and tell your boys to buy it as well. Let's have ourselves a hell of a summer. Oh, don't be dumb. Drink responsibly.
Twisted Tea Brewing Company, Cincinnati, Ohio. Please drink responsibly.
Can you think of, like, when I say 204, obviously yep. Not 200, you're going to be insufferable on episode 209. But for 204, I just say, like, what, like that batting average, who what's the first name you think of? When I was like, he's a fucking 204 hitter. Who do you think of?
Oh man, I don't know. Like, is there a historical 204 mark that I should be?
No, just I feel like that you're not gonna say like a 200 hitter. You're gonna, like, if you're gonna insult someone, be like, what is he at, like fucking 204?
Oh, that might be. Yeah, maybe that's reserved for like a I don't know, for like a backup or somebody. Like, that's typically when you think about that, right? Like a guy who doesn't get much playing time at all. When he does, goes up there just flailing and shit left and right. Yeah. Doesn't he? Can't run into one.
Yeah.
Like almost a guy who, when you see his name penciled into the lineup, say in the postseason, you wonder, are we even fucking trying right now? Like, are we trying?
Right.
That guy. So you might be like, yeah.
Right.
Like, he's a 204 hitter. Mm-hmm. Like, you're trying to boost him up because you know he's probably more like a 200 to 180 something hitter, somewhere in there.
Right. Something like that, yeah. We got to talk about these games. We got some ALCS, NLCS reaction coming up. As you know, we didn't do a stream last night.
No, did not do a stream.
No.
And streaming.
Do you think it's our fault that Tampa didn't clinch? I mean, every time we streamed, they won.
They won.
And then we didn't do a stream, and they lost.
Yeah. As a baseball guy, I think you know the answer to that question from me.
Yeah.
If we had done something consistently and had gotten consistent results, and then we just stopped doing it and the results were different the very moment we stopped doing what we had consistently been doing, I wouldn't be able to show my face in a clubhouse today.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. You know what the coolest part about streaming every single fucking night pretty much has been for me is the regulars. It's almost like we've created a baseball dive bar on the internet.
Yes. Well, that's what the fuck, dude. I tell you, like, you're absolutely right, Freddie. If you're listening to this, you son of a bitch, you stay out of my DMs, goddammit. Freddie, I woke up to a picture this morning of fucking Roy Oswalt screaming in my face. This is our game 4 starter, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, yeah.
I love every minute
Freddie's
of it.
Freddie's great. I mean, like, so if you're not watching these streams, if you're a Starting Nine listener, if you're a member of the Grounds crew, and you love baseball, and you're watching all these games and not pulling up the live stream alongside to enhance your viewing experience, you're missing out. Because like I said, it is very like local watering hole type vibes where the same people are in there every single night. Like, to the point where in the chat, they're not even using their real names, but like I know team affiliation just by memorizing their usernames. Like, I know people in the chat. It's like, oh, that guy's a Braves fan, that guy's a Yankee fan, that guy's an Astros fan. That's
well, you see their name and you can familiarize what they're gonna say.
Yeah.
You've got to, you know, and yeah, I do. I appreciate that. And like we said, look, we didn't set out to do the streams to try to, you know, wrangle people away from the ball game.
Right.
That's not what that is. It's merely just, hey, because you know the dive bar is a great it's a great analogy, because think about the people that we've had in, that we've had come and talk to us, right? Like, we had fucking Josh Donaldson, JD, who's come and hung out for like an hour multiple times. that's like having a guy who, it's like a Sunday afternoon, you and the boys are out grabbing a random like post-church beer or whatever. I don't know if that's a thing. Is that a thing? Or post-church beer is a thing?
I think so.
And you're like, you just happen to, you're like, oh, okay, we're on the way to the barbecue. We'll stop off at this place right here. And you walk in, and then right behind you walks in like a fucking former MVP that you know. And you're like, why is he? the fuck is he doing here? Well, it's Sunday. It's like 2 in the afternoon. We are in the middle of nowhere right now. And Ozzie Guillen is just walked into the fucking room. Are you serious?
Yeah, that was crazy.
You know, White Sox Dave brings Ozzie. I mean, we had Jared Weaver briefly and in very, very terrible reception increments.
Awful.
But we had Weave. I mean, we've had just Euclid. Random awesome folks show up and just start bullshitting, talking about the game, talking about what we're seeing. Yeah. So yeah, it's been
Lucas Giolito.
Yeah, fuck Giolito. It's been awesome.
Tristan McKenzie.
Yeah,
we've had guys.
Yeah, like and, wow, I fucking forgot about McKenzie.
Yeah.
Just because that feels like it's been a year ago mm-hmm. almost. But that's yeah, I've had a good time. I have enjoyed myself just talking shit.
Would you like to do it again tonight?
I mean, if I don't think I have anything to do.
Yeah, me either. I think it's time. I think it's time to bring back the watering hole. And like I said, Dallas, you know,
we got to get the Rays to clinch. That's what we got to do.
Yeah, you make your way out here next year. I feel like that is an easy lift in terms of one night a week. Fire up the TV.
Oh, we're streaming. We will. No, what we do is we give the grounds crew the ability to vote on what game of the week they would like streamed. Mm. Because what we're going to be able to do
six TVs, Dallas. I mean, we can watch 60. They can vote on 6 TVs.
Okay, fair
enough. They can vote on 5 TVs or 4 TVs.
Well, but I'm just going to say there could be a – because there's inevitably – look, there's a lot that I've got going on in my brain because each week – inevitably, there's a group of starters who will be making 2 starts a week, right?
Yep.
There will be a group of them. Mm-hmm. So I've got ideas surrounding that. I've got, trust me, that would be a fucking home run.
Yeah.
Pun very much
intended. I see what you did there. Home run, baseball reference.
Mm.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, you should move here, like, to the area.
We're working on getting mobile, Karabas. There's only so much I can do at a time during a global pandemic.
Yeah, no, that is true. That is true. But yeah, if you're around, it's on Twitter, the Starting Nine Twitter account. Check us out. We will be. I sounds like we'll be live tonight. Maybe see a clincher. And,
God, I can't wait.
If the Rays clinch, we will have not one. But two arms from the Tampa Bay Rays making their starting nine debuts. And it sounds like, it sounds, Dallas, I mean, it sounds like to me that you're in touch with people with the Tampa Bay Rays as well. I mean, I feel like there's room for three.
The third guest mm-hmm. would be fucking epic.
Yeah.
Epic. Yeah. Yeah. So I woke up this morning. Well, no, actually, when did I see it? I saw it last night, I think.
Yeah, it was
like
last
right before
night.
I was going to bed, I think, right? Yeah, yeah, that's when I sent it to you.
You missed me just by like 5 minutes. I was up very late last night, and you sent it maybe 2 minutes after I went to sleep.
So just you know, going through one last scroll before I'm getting ready to shut her down and open up the old IG. And what do I see but a message from G-Man Choi.
Yeah.
And I legitimately go, what the fuck? And opened it up. And he is politely requesting the Saturdays Are for the Choi's t-shirt.
Yes.
And I was beside myself. I was like, is this who? I mean, they can't just, like, you can't duplicate a blue check mark on the IG, can you? Like they do on the tweet box? Like, is that, that's got to be him. So I was like, yeah, yo, fuck, what you need, big dog? You tell me how many, you tell me the sizes, tell me where to ship them, and you will be wearing them very, very quickly. So as soon as Choi gets back to me, they will have the Saturdays Are for the Choi's t-shirts distributed to them, and, you bet your ass the effort has been made to sit down, slam beers and rip heaters with Choi.
Just absolute monster cigars.
Yes.
I would love that.
Just the whole fucking pack of them.
Yeah. I'm also working on a piece of merch. It's been a real struggle to get approval on a Tyler Glasnow sex god t-shirt.
Sometimes you just have to switch up the lettering. Sometimes it's a matter of the verbiage, Jared. Yeah. Sex God. I think the sex part could be the hurdle you're running into.
I think it's God. I think it's a religious thing. They're like, you know, they don't really.
Oh, so that's easy. That's an easy fix. G-A-W-D.
Sex Pharaoh.
No, G-A-W-D, sex, like, oh my, like, no, I'm not saying, like, he's a god, I'm saying, like, oh my god.
I'm saying I'm a god.
That's a sex god.
Yeah, I think it's worth a shot, but I told the Barstool merch team, I was like, listen, I get
just
it
get
if we
it
can't
done.
Get approval from the Players Association to put out this t-shirt, but print me one. Like, even if we can't sell the fucking things, print one so that I can have it. Like, of course I make merch so that fans can have, you know, something to wear to represent their favorite players and teams. But at the end of the day, I don't think there's ever been a piece of merch that I put out that I didn't put out because I wanted to wear the shirt.
No, I own every single fucking shirt that I've ever designed. I own one of them. My wife is up my ass on the daily to get rid of other shit. She goes, yeah. She told me this yesterday. She goes, where'd you get that? I was wearing a fucking Slam Diego shirt. Where'd you get that? And I go, she goes, are you fucking serious? How many of these things do you have laying around? Yeah. I've washed, I don't know how many fucking Pound Town t-shirts. There's only one of you, and I'm washing four or five of those fucking things. She went off, and I was like, so you probably don't want to hear about the Saturdays Are for the Choice shirt that I got rolling. Is this a bad time to bring up the Saturdays Are for the Choice?
Yeah. I need to get a Pound Town t-shirt.
I'm
or
with
hoodie.
You. Fucking say, hey, keep your eyes peeled. Damn it. You know what? She put the box in the mail yesterday.
Yeah.
With no Pound Town shirt in it. But you do have two. You have a jersey and a shirt coming your way.
Ooh. Love that.
So.
You know what else I love?
Keep your eyes
fucking
peeled.
Roman.
You should.
Yeah, I do. Is there anything like, do we have a promo code for Roman? Because I know that actually I was, Rays fans do exist, believe it or not. I was talking to a Rays fan last night who was very concerned about the status of my erection during Tyler Glasnow's start. And I was like, well, good thing we have a way to help you out with that, because it's getroman.com/starting. But is there anything that you have to say about Roman in general?
I was I'm looking out for their new liquid application that I'm sure they're going to have to come out with after you struggled so mightily during that Glasnow outing. Mm-hmm. There were moments where I could almost feel you from across the nation swiping yourself into like a small skin fire. There was smoke. There was a lot of swipage going on. And typically it doesn't take that many swipes, Jared. Just a couple.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
And you're good. Mm-hmm. But you, it sounded like a fucking bullhorn going, mm-hmm. My God, Karabas, what are those Roman swipes made out of? Velcro? Why is it making that noise in your crotchal region right now? So you were a little aggressive.
It's actually,
doesn't have to be that aggressive,
folks. Let me read you this text exchange from the Rays fan. Are you ready for tonight? I said, I'm naked. Astros are 0-2 against us when Altuve homers in the first inning. This is excellent. I said, I don't know if I can stay hard for this long. And then they said, I think you have a sponsor for that. And I said, I'm currently swiping. Do you have trouble staying hard for the entirety of a Tyler Glasnow start? Head to GetRoman.com. And I said, GetRoman.com/starting so you can stay hard for the duration of every Tyler Glasnow start. I mean, that's a whole ad read right there.
That is. That's what you call boots on the ground sort of initiative, mm-hmm. right? There was no prompting necessary. Nothing. The individual knew mm-hmm. where that story was headed, mm-hmm. knew how it was going to end, and it ends with him entering / starting. He's going to go to GetRoman.com. He's going to enter / starting, mm-hmm. and he's going to have his swipes. And once he figures out his plan, for just $5 a month, you're going to have all those swipes coming to you. Mm-hmm. He understood it. You understood
for
it.
Sure.
I think at some point in time, we should be the facilitators of the Tyler Glasnow Roman relationship. Yeah, absolutely. Swipes Club.
The Tyler Glasnow Swipes Club. I mean, I feel like, you know.
I feel like that's a jacket.
Yeah, he could probably. like, Like one of those like the Overs bowling, Club bowling league champion jackets.
Yeah, well, yeah, well, like Big Cat, mm-hmm. Big Cat. They've got the Overs Club. If you bet the over and you win, you get a jacket sent out to you. Yeah, the members' choice or the members only jackets. Mm-hmm. The fucking George Costanzas, absolutely. Yep.
Tyler Glasnow Swipes Club. I feel like if the way to join the Tyler Glasnow Swipes Club is you have to watch every single Tyler Glasnow start and live tweet it. That's how you join the Swipes Club. It's pretty cut and dry.
How does one, because you're gonna have people that want to join this, Jared. Yeah. People are gonna want in on the Swipes Club.
Right.
So how are we going to be able to determine that they have done enough? Because we can't track individuals over 33 starts. We can't do that. I feel like club membership is. Club membership is an important first step to the club.
Right.
So we can't just alienate everybody. It can't just be you and me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like you're going to have to – it's almost like applying for college. Like you're going to have to like write like a cover letter type deal.
I was going to say, what about one strong supporting tweet for Tyler Glasnow with a video highlight of him embarrassing somebody this year?
Yeah, that's fair.
Is that fair mm-hmm. enough? All right. So if you're listening right now, Grounds Crew members, what we need is you have 200 and what, 80 characters?
240?
Somewhere. You have a tweet.
Yeah.
You have a tweet to be able to craft, tell us exactly why Tyler Glasnow is to you what he is, why the Swipes Club is for you, and show us the footage that makes you. And we'll be fine. And you're in.
And then you're in. And then we'll obviously have to put out merch for a t-shirt.
Yep.
Yeah.
Already looking up the jackets.
Yeah. Looking up the jackets. And we'll have t-shirts and I don't know. Maybe we'll put out joggers. That'd be cool. We haven't gotten into yes. jogger territory. I mean, because that's another comment that I made last night. I can't wear jeans during these starts.
No,
I can't watch these starts with that kind of restriction.
Soft resistance.
Yeah.
Kidding me? It could look like somebody fell off their motorcycle without a helmet on.
Right.
A lot of road rash.
A lot of road rash.
Yeah. Foreskin and denim, Jared. Mm. Just not a great, not the dynamic duo you thought they'd be.
No, not at all. Speaking of dynamics that we didn't think would happen, I don't think, even though it was that convincing of a victory for the Dodgers, I don't think that many people thought we'd be looking at a 2-1 Braves series lead 3 games into the NLCS.
No, I feel like if anything, people thought it would be 2-1 Dodgers, where the Braves were able to sneak one or eke one out, if you look at them like that. Mm-hmm. If you're just kind of not giving any credit to what the young starters have done, and you're thinking that that's just kind of a flash in the pan of success, you felt like the postseason would be when that gets shut down. Nope, not the case. No, sure, Kyle Wright, they ran into one yesterday, an absolute buzzsaw. Mm-hmm. But what you saw out of the Dodgers late in game two is exactly what you expected if you were a Dodger player and a Dodger fan to kind of continue. To this extent, to a record-setting fucking half inning, a record setting. Nobody's done that in baseball history. And the last time they did, how about this? Last year. And guess who it happened to, Carrabas?
The Braves.
The fucking Braves.
Yeah. Again? That was the Cardinals Braves?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, just get whacked. But it was indicative of what I think we have come to expect from this lineup in terms of the difficulty in getting them out, the difficulty in pitching to them. Again, we're not talking about, oh, well, everybody expected 11 runs in the first fucking inning. No, no, no. But you expect a team to be able to do some damage in an inning. You expect that team right there at any given point to be able to produce 2 runs, whether it's via the long ball and then getting some guys on and getting them over. They just, that lineup can do that at any point in time. 7-8-9, 8-9-1, 3-4-5. Doesn't matter. It simply doesn't. And that's what you saw yesterday, was a collective group just go, all right, pedal to the metal. No more of this bullshit. And it's interesting how this game operates. Because in one series, you've got a guy and Alex Bregman, who is absolutely scorching the baseball and has zero to show for it. And then you have a lineup collectively, 1 through 9, scorching the baseball. And they could have put 15 fucking fielders out there, Jared, and it wouldn't have mattered, is what it felt like. It's just, it's crazy how this game works, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the Max Muncy Grand Slam in the first inning, had to have felt like a walk-off, right? Like, it's like I just hit a home run that effectively ended this baseball game. Like, 11-0 ball game, you ain't coming back. They obviously added on 4 more runs at that point, so they ended up scoring 15 runs total. But 11 first-inning runs with 5 homers. 5 homers in a playoff game.
It felt like somebody was watching. It felt like you were on the schoolyard watching that fight where the guy is just absolutely getting his ass whipped. Yeah. It's not a good one. No. It's already over. Somebody please step in. And then they finally do, right? And they pull the kid off of the guy who's just bleeding on the ground, laying there. Yeah. And then out of nowhere, here comes this fucking psycho from the playground and just levels this kid, just kicks him right in the fucking head, toe first, blood everywhere. You're like, that was completely uncalled for, but it is absolutely over now. Yeah. Like, there's no way that kid's getting up.
Yeah.
That's what that Muncy Grand Slam felt like.
I think my gut tells me that the Dodgers win again in game 4. My gut tells me that Clayton Kershaw comes back and is dominant, and that the Dodgers win like a 5-2 ball game or something like that. And then we've got ourselves a series. I feel like, you know, fuck it, we deserve it. Like, first of all, this Braves Dodgers series, it has the capability to go 7. Like, these are,
yes,
like, everyone wants to talk about how good the Dodgers are, and they are. They are very, very, very good. The best team in baseball. But in terms of how they match up against the Braves, I feel like it's a lot more evenly matched than the first 2 games would suggest, or that game 3 would suggest on that end of the spectrum. So I think we're going to see a tie series. I don't know where it goes from there. You know, we got to break it down game by game. It's not just, you can't just like forecast these things out, but I do believe in momentum, and I do believe that there might be, depending on the character of the guys in the Braves clubhouse, and I know that they, you know, they've got a lot of good character guys in there, like Freddie Freeman and Nick Markakis, who obviously
there
isn't
you go.
One of the best. He's not one of the best players on the team, but he's been there and he's done that.
That's what this moment. So that's what Nick Markakis is here for. That's why it's important to have a guy like him in that room right now. Mm-hmm. You roll out and catch a beating like that, you almost need a veteran to tell you how to act.
Yeah.
To remind you, like, no, we don't press here, okay? We're not showing up to the yard today treating this as a must-win game because of what happened last night. Like, stop all that. Yeah. Stop. Let's take our breath,
right?
Let's
avenge
calm down.
Yourself from no, that loss.
Right.
Like, it's just, it only counts as one.
Like, if this were, and because I don't know what the Atlanta Braves do to keep themselves loose or whatever, but if this were the Oakland A's, it would be grab your soccer ball, grab the football, grab the hacky sack, and get the fuck out there. Because that's what each and every one of those dudes does before the game, right? Your shortstop is throwing the football around. Your relievers are playing hacky sack. You've got a fucking first baseman and whoever kicking soccer goals across the baseball field to each other. Like, that's what they do. So I would tell the Braves, grab your fucking hacky sacks. Grab the football. Get out there. Do what you do to stay loose. That was one game. It was one game. We've got more ahead of us here. That's what a guy like Markakis should be, and I know is, providing for that room. It's just that reminder, because you got a lot of young guys in there who could very easily feel that pressure, and they could be processing that ass beating and turning it into, like, sometimes that game could feel like you just lost 2.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need to do that to yourself. There's already the playoff pressure and the competitor that you're going against. No reason to make yourself another variable.
Do you think the Dodgers have just woken up, or was this game an aberration?
Oh, it's not an aberration, because that lineup is very capable of doing shit like this.
Sure.
Like,
but against, I mean, we've been harping on how dominant the Braves pitching has been in the postseason, and then the Dodgers are like, oh yeah, by the way, 15 spot.
Well, so go back and look though at how that all kind of unfolded. It starts with not getting some things going your way, mm-hmm. right? The ground ball to Mookie Betts, the bang bang call, the safe call at first base. That starts to mount. It snowballs, and then the next thing you know, it's a fucking 11 spot.
Yeah.
So early on, if things go, if you get the bounce your way, maybe the game looks completely different. So it was a matter of not getting the breaks and then not being able to work out of them. And it's that simple. And anytime you start, and it's not like the Braves gave away outs per se, but they just weren't able to log them. And when you have to pitch around those instances, you know, you start to sacrifice, or you're not sacrificing, but you start to, your polish starts to wear off because now you're making extra pitches in situations where you might not have to otherwise. And that's when your exposure level starts to increase. Guys are seeing you a lot, and fucking 2/3 of an inning was all they needed.
Yeah. When you've got a red hot offense like the Dodgers right now, and see, this is where the difference is really felt, because you don't have Mike Soroka. By the way, check out episode 203. We had an interview with Mike Soroka. It was very, very good. He was awesome, as always. But you don't have Mike Soroka, and you don't have Cole Hamels. So that means when you get to a game four, and the Dodgers have the luxury of trotting out a Clayton Kershaw, you have to go with an individual by the name of Bryce Wilson, who this year, I mean, 15 2/3 innings, so very small sample size, but he gave up 7 earned runs in those 15 2/3, and he walked 9 batters.
Yeah.
So he's punching out a batter per inning, but he's almost walking a batter per inning. The traffic, how's that look? A 1.72 whip. I mean, for his career, because he debuted in 2018 when he was 20. This is not a guy that has over, he has time in the big leagues over the last 3 years, but in total has thrown 42 2/3 innings and has a career whip of 1.81 and a career ERA of 5.91. And that is the individual that you are asking to give you innings in a postseason game against Clayton Kershaw, where if you lose this game, you are now in a tie NLCS after taking a 2-0 series lead. So, yeah. I don't know if this is, I mean,
here's the thing.
It's not like it's mandatory to keep him out there for five innings to get his brains beat in, but.
And here's the positive about that is some of the guys that you saw last night for the Braves, not their plus side guys. Right? So, in the event that a team is winning.
Yep.
You have guys that you would typically go to keep that game right where it's sure. at. In the event your team is losing, you have another group of guys that you probably call on to keep the game where it's at. So, with that beating that occurred last night, the Braves, early on, were sort of able to identify who was going to be out there eating up those innings. And your offense continues to dictate that. So, if we're not in the game in the fifth, well, we know who's going in. If we're not in the game in the seventh, we know who's going in. And that almost gave Snit the ability to game plan around that.
Yeah.
So, all right, we know who the guys are going to be tomorrow. So let's get these other guys the work today, knowing that they're, one, need to get the work, and two, are going to be relied upon later in this series. Because it's 5 games. It's probably going to go 5 games. Let's make sure everybody's clicking.
Well,
so they take care of their plus side guys, give them the rest. Now they're going to show up today ready to rock.
Credit to Snit, because like you have your starter go out there and absolutely shit the bed, giving you, like, he got 2 outs.
Yeah.
Kyle Wright got you 2 outs in a playoff mm-hmm. game, and you only had to deploy 4 more pitchers the rest of the way. That's great. Like,
huge.
Like,
huge,
to be able
man.
To do
That's
that.
That's huge.
And not, I mean, like, Shane Green got the last 4 outs, but to not be able to, like, to not have to burn any of your top guys that could help you on a day like today where, I don't know, let's go out on a limb here. It's probably going to be another bullpen day. Yeah, and you didn't have to burn your anyone else of value in game three because there was just you knew right away it didn't take much time to be able to come to the conclusion that hey, today's not our day, boys.
And so now think about that. 11 runs in the top of the first. 11 runs or top whatever. 11 runs in the first inning. They scored 15 total. So if your bullpen is covering 8 2/3 innings, yeah, and they only give eight up four third. Runs, 8 1/3 innings, and they only give up
four
runs, I'll take that.
Yeah, of course.
You want to know why I'll take that? Because not one of those motherfuckers thought that they were going to be pitching at the time they were pitching it.
Correct.
So for them to, and you go, well, Dallas, they were at the game. They're expecting to play some point in time. They're going to be prepared. No, I get that. We're not dumb. Yeah, they're on the team. They can expect to play. But when you start the ball game and you go down there as a reliever, like for myself, when I was in the bullpen, a long guy, Crumps, my fucking cleats aren't even tied in the first inning. Like, what? Like, no, I'm the long. I'm the one who's going to be eating these innings up. He's going to get through the first inning. Like, you know, my phone call might come around the second or third, maybe. Need to get you through three innings, get you to the bridge, whatever. But holy shit, you get down there and you're just getting comfortable. I got to tie the cleats up. I got to get the arm cranking. I haven't even had my Gatorade.
Yeah. Is there any chance Atlanta goes up 3-1?
Why? So you're saying, based on what we saw 2 days ago at the end of the ball game, yesterday, the entire game, and what we would be looking for today is an offense that has woken up and is not just getting it shoved up their ass like the rest of the competition has been when they faced the Braves. Mm-hmm. And they've now, is it safe to say that this might be the weakest option that the Braves are going to run out there to start the ball game against the Dodgers? Is that fair?
I think that's more than fair.
So knowing that the Braves bullpen has been elite, if not the best in baseball, what you have to wonder is what those early innings look like. And you'd be ignorant to say that good pitching can't once again dominate a good offense, but you would also be ignorant to not pay attention to what this offense has just done over the last 12 innings or whatever it is. They've just been absolutely annihilating the baseball. Yeah. And they're going to be going up against a group of guys who, like it or not, they've seen before now. So should this right now, what it's going to be about, who's one step ahead? The bullpen and the staff for the Atlanta Braves? Or have the Dodgers been able to concoct an approach that they can take up there against this Braves bullpen? Whether it's eliminating the off-speed, make it for strikes, make them throw it twice for strikes, and then we're ambushing the fastball, not even waiting around. Don't know what that outlook is. I will always err on the side of pitching being able to dominate a lineup because, like I told you before, that's the beauty about baseball is all it takes is some asshole like me to actually make his way all the way to the ballpark and have a day that nobody fucking saw coming.
It's true.
Nope, literally nobody. That's all it takes. That's all it takes. And the Braves have got guys that can go out and do that.
Yeah. So to circle back to the question, What are the odds that you have for the Braves to actually go up 3-1? I know you ain't picking them because I know you ain't got the balls.
Look, I told you that I want the Braves to win.
Yeah, but will you pick them? Do you have the balls to pick them, or are you just?
I mean,
are you
with the way that today's the way that the game appears to be headed today?
So you don't have the balls.
I don't have the balls to pick them today. Because we're talking about Clayton Kershaw, who's put together two really good starts.
Back spasms.
All good. Two really good starts.
What if Clayton Kershaw I mean, we've seen it. We've seen it in this postseason where it's like, okay, this starter might not be available. Oh wait, yes, he is.
Dustin May will have four innings for you.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. So that takes you through five.
Mm-hmm.
Then what? You got Kenley coming out.
Handed to Trinan.
Yeah, but he's already gotten taken deep in this series. Then what do you got?
In the ninth, we're talking about the sixth. Okay.
All right, we'll see. Because you know what?
And then we
you
got
know what, Dallas?
And then
you
we
know
got,
what, Dallas? You know what, Dallas?
Pedro Baez
you know
might
what,
be a guy that gets a ball
Dallas,
late
you know
in
what?
The game. What?
I'm picking the fucking Braves. Wow. Braves are going up 3-1 tonight. The Braves are going up 3-1 in the series tonight.
Clayton Kershaw, Carrabba's, the game's greatest left-handed fucking pitcher. The greatest pitcher you've seen pitch in your lifetime.
I'm not picking against Clayton Kershaw. That's not what I'm doing here. I'm thinking Kershaw gives you five. I think Kershaw gives you five innings, two hits, no earned runs, one walk, eight strikeouts, 93 pitches, something like that.
So are you telling me you like the Dodger bullpen more than you like the Braves bullpen?
Wouldn't that be the opposite if I'm picking the Braves to win? Because I'm...
That's what I just said.
I'm just saying I like the Braves lineup. I'm saying the Braves lineup
for you to go against the greatest left-handed pitcher of our time.
I'm not going against Clayton Kershaw. I'm going against... I'm not going against Kershaw.
No.
I'm betting on the Braves lineup to fuck. You want to see a response? No.
Well,
the Dodgers got all riled up because they were down 2-0 in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Braves are going to be like, you're just going to let this team just take a shit on you like that? You're just going to let them open fist slap you in the mouth and then take your lunch money the next night? No.
That's the conversation the fucking Dodgers are having. They go, look, can you believe these baby Braves? Can you believe that these baby Braves? Oh, look, they got Freddie Freeman. They think he's an MVP. That's cute. We've got Mookie Betts. We've got Clayton Kershaw. We've got Cody Bellinger. We've got actual MVPs, okay? So, remember who we are, boys and girls. Remember that we are the Big Blue Machine. It's Dodger Town for a fucking reason. That's the conversation they're having right now. And they're saying, you know the storyline surrounding our guy, our dude? The golden arm? About he can't get it done? No, he's been getting it done in the postseason. You know who wasn't getting it done? It was us. You know who just got it done? Us. We just scored two fucking touchdowns against that team yesterday. And we ain't stopping. They're running out a third string quarterback to start against us. You think we're okay with that? No. Blitzkrieg. All four downs. Here it comes. That's what's happening in the Dodgers clubhouse right now.
Yeah. I don't buy it.
Well, you don't have to buy it. They're going to cash you out anyway.
I think you know who we haven't really had a moment from yet in this series? Marcell Ozuna. That's my guy to watch in game 4 tonight. Or whenever you're listening to this. It's Thursday? Yeah? What fucking day? It's Thursday. Thursday night, game 4, Dodgers, Braves. My guy to look out for, Marcell Ozuna. Because Freddie Freeman, he's the MVP in the National League this year. He's had his moments in this series. Like, he's had his moments where you're like, yep, that's Freddie Freeman. He's doing that thing again where he's really fucking good at baseball. Marcell Ozuna, he needs to have one of those games where it's like, oh, wow. Like that. So that's why... Everyone.
A two-homer game?
Yeah.
Are you calling a two-homer game for Ozuna right now? Is that what you just said?
I think I said something about a three-homer game.
You've been drinking.
I mean, he's done it this year.
Hey, great. I don't know that that's happening.
Yeah.
That would absolutely be a signature. What do you mean? No, that's not fucking happening. No, you're telling me he's taking Kershaw deep twice today? Because that's exactly what you're telling me, and that ain't happening.
You think
that is not happening.
Kershaw never gives up homers in the postseason. Yeah, that never.
I didn't tell you that. I'm just telling you he's not taking Kershaw deep twice. That's what I said.
Oh, yeah, lefty-righty matchup. That's never been favorable for the hitter ever.
No, it's not happening. I'm telling you that your guy is not taking my guy deep twice today.
I mean, you're assuming that he even makes that out of the first inning. He might have the back spasms might flare up and Kershaw's done after two-thirds of an inning.
No, the back spasms are just code for I've been carrying this fucking team for over a decade and it's finally about time I've got some help.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll see. But that's my guy to watch, Marcell Ozuna. And hey, you know what? If you're listening to this podcast right now and the game hasn't started yet, why don't you put on the live stream tonight? Because you're going to want the payoff to this conversation. I mean, Dallas and I are having a conversation where he's clearly sucking off the Dodgers, and I'm the more realistic person that's saying, hey, the Braves are going to win this game, and Marcell Ozuna is going to be a big reason why. Well, if Marcell Ozuna does anything of note, you're going to want to see what I have to see to Dallas. And you can watch that live. Just go to Starting Nine's Twitter account right now. We're probably streaming right now. Maybe you're listening to us, and then you're watching us at the same time, having a different conversation. It's Starting Nine-ception.
Is this the evening game tonight?
This is the evening game, yes.
Okay, good. All right.
Yes. So you have the ALCS Game 5 is at 5 p.m. Eastern, and Dodgers-Braves, NLCS, Game 4.
Hold on. No, what time's the game? The AL game's at 2 o'clock Pacific? I thought it was at 1 Pacific.
No, 2.
Wow.
Yeah, and then game 4 coming at you at 8 p.m. Eastern.
All right.
5 Pacific. 5 Pacific.
Pacific Standard Time. Yeah.
usually, I mean, like, this is my secret. People have asked me this before. And they're kind of like, dude, you guys are doing the podcast. Got to jump on Crush Radio after that. When you're done with that, it's like you're probably like banging out a ton of blogs. And then the stream starts. So you guys are just like keeping the energy high during the stream for hours because there's two games tonight. And then after that, you and Dallas are going to do Morning Wood. Energy's got to be high for those videos. I mean, you got to have high energy for that. But then after that's done, you're probably looking at, I don't know, 2:30 a.m. Eastern. How do you bring the energy up so high for that stuff? And then, like, when you want to wind down, maybe get some good sleep. What's the move? What is the move, Dallas?
Tinctures. You know the drill. I don't know why we're having this conversation again, but I'd like to have it again because I want you to feel as good as I do and as good as Jared does at the end of our day. There's no reason you shouldn't have that same opportunity. There's no reason you shouldn't be your own conductor on the CBDMD train. With a group like them committed to providing you, me, us, the grounds crew, high quality, THC-free CBD oil products, there's no reason you shouldn't be full steam ahead. And I mean that in all sincerity. You want to get to sleep? Maybe you're trying to crush the books, trying to get that cram session, and you just want to lay the head down once you're done. But you don't want to have to drink 7 or 8 adult beverages to get there and then end up pissing all over yourself or in a plant in the corner and then maybe get drug out for power hour by your friends. And look what you did. All you had to do was take CBDMD and you could have avoided that entire mess. No pissing in the plant in the corner. No crushing a power hour you had no business being involved in. The CBDMD tucks you into bed and keeps you right where you need to be on a level playing field at night, recuperating so you can get up the next day and attack that fucking day, crush that power hour, piss all over that plant in the corner. But that doesn't happen if you don't get the rest you got the night before thanks to CBDMD. So what you're going to do, you're going to go to CBMD.com, promo code STARTING9. That's starting the number 9, okay? No spaces. And that's going to be 25% off. 25% off your order of the most premium and high-quality CBD oil products you can get your dirty little dick beaters on. CBDMD.com, promo code starting and the number 9. Please. Join team sublingual. Get the drops in you. Drop your head on the bed. And you will rise the next day like a phoenix from the foggy ashes.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. You know what else I love?
Talk to me.
The Tampa Bay Rays just having a stranglehold on this series, and you can lose a game and just not give a shit. I mean, like I said, Dave Roberts ain't walking through that door, Dallas.
No, he's not.
He's busy managing a game in Arlington, Texas right now. So he ain't walking through that door. Big Poppy ain't walking through that door. He's busy doing the Fox post game. So I think it's just if you're the Houston Astros, you're delaying the inevitable. You ain't the 04 Red Sox. You're not. You're just not. Don't let us win tonight because we got fucking Joe Schmo in game 5 and whoever the fuck. It's not the case. You don't have Garrett Cole. You don't have Justin Verlander. It's just it's not meant to be. It's not your year. Trust me. I mean, if there is any indication that it's not your year, check your Twitter mentions dating back to January. It's just not your year.
Well, see that? I don't know. It would absolutely lead me to believe.
Stop it! Stop it!
I mean, how is it not their year? They had fans eliminated from their games. Mm-hmm. They had the commissioner of baseball open up the postseason to let seems like them in. Because they're the only fucking sub-500 team to be let into the playoffs ever. The Brewers. Yeah. But it feels like this season was absolutely geared to be their year if they were able to take advantage of it.
Yeah, that is kind of a good point where
they had Justin Verlander. Mm-hmm. So what? So that didn't work out because injuries happen, and we all know that. And that's brutal. But other teams face those same things. So, yeah, I feel like, you know, maybe it wasn't set up specifically for them, but there's no way that they just entered this year thinking, oh, not us, not us. No, they thought us again. We'll show you just who we are. We'll show you that you're damn right. Knowing what pitch is coming makes us look a hell of a lot better, but we're still good and we're going to fight and we'll show you that we're good ball players. And they have. They've shown us that, but we didn't need to know that. We knew that already.
I have a confession.
Oh. When's the last time you sinned, child?
Every day. I have a confession to make. And I'm ready to share it with the audience. And you, Dallas.
Okay. Okay.
I feel bad for Jose Altuve.
No,
yes,
don't.
I do.
No, you
I
don't.
Do.
No, no, you don't. I don't believe you. Nope.
I do.
Not even for
do
a
you
minute.
Want to know the moment that I started to feel bad for him?
There wasn't one, but you can tell me whatever lie you're going to tell me right now, please.
So last night, I mean, Jose Altuve homered again, first inning off of Glasnow.
Fuck you, guy.
After the game, he was the guest on TBS. The booth was talking to him, and he put on the headset, and they asked him a question. And before he answered the question, he was like, "Hey guys, I just first want to thank you for having me on.
Thanks for having me on." Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that was the moment I was like, "He really, really, really cares." Like. People's perception of him as a human being. Like it's beyond, it's beyond what people think of me and my as a baseball player and my legacy as a baseball player. Like mm-hmm. I think it bothers him to his core how
Absolutely.
People view him as a human being.
Absolutely. Absolutely,
so
Jared.
That's what
and
that, move
that right
was.
There. And there's a reason why like I don't pile on that dude.
Yeah.
And what we've seen, like with his throwing shit, like I'll tell you right now, man, you could tell me which Astros were banging the cans for which other Astros, right? You could put names and faces to those questions that everybody across the game has still today. You could put names and faces to those questions. And I would not in a million years wish the yips or the thing on any one of those dudes. I would never in a million years do that. I could not do that. I couldn't sleep at night wanting someone to feel that.
Why?
And his reaction, and I'm I'm glad you brought that up, because I wouldn't talk about it otherwise, like what he said. And but I am a huge, like, I'm not going to drag you through the mud. I'm not going to pound you. I'm not going to do any of that. You want to know why? Because the conversations that Altuve has been forced to have outside of the baseball world are the most painful conversations he'll ever have to have. And just because you or I don't get to hear how those go, just know that those have happened. He's had to explain to people who've looked up to him why what happened happened. And he's also, at some point in time, had to draw a line where he probably can't be as open and honest with some of the people he'd like to be, because if he confirmed for them some of the questions that we all have, could he trust that those answers don't get out? Probably not. So the people who are closest to him, he may still not be able to be as open and honest with them as he'd like to be. So when an individual has to wake up and go to bed bearing that load, Jared, there's no way for them to ever ditch that load. They just have to learn how to live with it. And that right there is a painful, painful lesson that will be learned over the course of his entire life. Because at some point in time, when his career comes to an end and it's time to celebrate him, do you think that that moment in time gets overlooked? No. Do you think that we don't talk about that? Do you think that that's not acknowledged? And he knows that. He knows right now, you could hit fast forward on all of their careers and end them the way that they would want to be ended. The life after is what he knows is coming. And you will never, ever, ever be able to talk about 2017 with any sort of pride and with any sort of ability to separate yourself from the player you are, the player you were, to the player that played that season under those circumstances. Right. And that is a battle that you just don't want to have. That's a battle you just don't want to fight, because there's no winning that battle. Each and every day is fought just trying to get somebody to believe you aren't who you probably aren't in your heart, because that was a moment in time, a mistake that was made, and he'll spend the rest of his life bearing that load.
I mean, he won the MVP that year.
And that's what, Jared, and do you think that he doesn't think to himself, did I? And that's the problem, is inside, he knows he's that good. And outside, we know he's that good. The shitty part about it is you will always be able to ask that question. Well, how good? Because how much of this was based on those transgressions?
Yeah.
And that leads us all back to the point of he can only be so honest with you up to a certain point, because he can't let the cat out of the bag. He can't do that. Because once he does that, there's no going back. There's no putting the toothpaste back in the tube. Once he's told you who was beating the can for who, it's all over. It's all over there. Mm. So even in a world where he would want to be, even in a world where it could maybe give them some peace of mind, they can't be 100% honest and transparent with you. Maybe even their loved ones. And do you want to wake up and go to bed with that on your plate?
No. I mean, for whatever money he's made and accolades that he's quote-unquote achieved,
don't mean a fucking
I wouldn't
thing.
Trade
don't.
Lives with him for a second. I wouldn't.
Jared, I have held other grown men in my arms, crying, tears, because the life that they've pursued, the life that they have in front of them financially, doesn't mean a fucking thing to them. Mm-hmm. Nothing to them. Because they don't have the ability to look themselves in the mirror the way that they want to.
Right.
And there's that is called peace of mind. And there is no amount of money that will ever replace that.
And
there's no accolade that will ever replace that. There's no shiny piece of metal that will ever distract you from that.
Yeah. So now do you believe me that I feel bad for Jose Altuve?
Nope.
I do. I genuinely do. And it's such a weird...
Because I don't know that you thought about all those things that I think about, and maybe you thought about it to that, like, on a certain level. So I'm being an asshole when I say no, because I'm just not going to give you the opportunity to wiggle out from crushing these motherfuckers the way you have.
I haven't crushed Altuve, really. I've gone after Correa mostly. And I think the Starting Nine listeners know exactly what my motivation is behind crushing him as a player, because I didn't really like him as an individual off the field.
Yes.
Jose Altuve... I feel like that one, I had sympathy for him, but not a ton, because he was like, I feel like if he hadn't hit the home run off of Chapman, and then he's coming home saying, no, don't rip my shirt, and then there's the rumors about the buzzers, and it's like, what, did he not want to rip the shirt because there was a buzzer? I still don't really know. Like, I mean,
he can't. That's the thing. He can't. What's he going to do? He's going to give you the answer to that.
Yeah.
If he gives you the answer to that, he opens up another box. Yeah. He opens up another door for the world to run through. Right. So he has to just stick to the tattoo. He has to, or you open that door. And now here you, here I, here everybody else comes running through it going, well, hold on. Why didn't you tell us this then? Yeah. Why didn't I'll sit, dude. Jared, I was heartbroken, man. I was heartbroken when this came out, and Altuve's a part of it. Heartbroken. Because him as a physical stature in our game, small dude up against the world, told no around every corner, you can't do it. I need every kid that loves the game to be taught by a guy like that. Mm-hmm. A guy who was told no every fucking day just because you don't look the part. What? That doesn't mean shit. And I want Altuve telling everybody that comes in contact with him the things that he was telling himself so that he could go out there and compete and do what he did. We are lucky to have talent like that in our game, which is why it's heartbreaking when I see shit like that. Because I love the game as much as I do, and I want these individuals to do what they can do and carry the game on and continue to grow the game. I only have so many words I can fucking say, and I'm not very smart. And a lot of the time, they don't make sense. So I need guys like him to do that legwork and just be that example. And when they're not, it fucking crushes me. Because I know, because I do, I saw a guy named Gregorio Petit, a teammate of mine. I fucking love Petit. Would take a bullet for that dude right now. Love him. And he posted a video about how Altuve getting crushed and what Altuve means to him, what Altuve means to other Venezuelan ball players, young and old. And that right there is fucking heartbreaking to me, dude. Mm-hmm. That crushes me more than ever feeling like Altuve slighted me as a former ball player, cheated me as a fan, cheated you, all of us. I just think about the game and I'm like, man, I need a Jose Altuve to have a clean rep, because he's a baller and he could do so much good for this game. And it hurts to think that he might not have that opportunity and have that same reception because of what happened. But I didn't make that bed.
Yeah, no, I hurt
for him, but it is, man. It is what it is.
I think that's why it makes it easier for me to make Carlos Correa the front-facing individual for the whole thing, because he was arrogant about it and he was an asshole about it, whereas Jose Altuve was not, I think.
Altuve just looks like take everything about him that you know about the scandal and all, take all that aside. Watch the way those two play the game of baseball. Who do you think has more fun playing the game of baseball? Correa or Altuve?
Correa.
You think Correa has more fun playing baseball? I don't. I think Altuve does. Just what, like the way he bounces around, the way he, like there's
Correa
a difference between,
like, I mean, watch him hit homers. Like, he's screaming. He's doing like the fucking Hulk Hogan hand to the ear thing, going around the bases.
Oh yeah, well, you know what that is, right?
Altuve hit a fucking walk off home run to send his team to the World Series, and he's jogging around the bases like it was a spring training homer.
Well, why?
I mean, I've asked that question before as well.
We all have, and that's part of my point about this. He's a different dude. He's a shell of Jose Altuve. Before this happened, you watch those guys play the game. In my mind, there was nobody having a better time than Altuve. Sliding, diving around, jumping, laughing, all that shit. He was bringing that out of Correa. The reason that Correa puts his hand up around third base now, do you remember what Correa asked, Jared? He asked, what are they going to say now? So that's what he's doing. What are you going to say now? I'm listening. I'm waiting. What are you going to say now? That's not him just, that's his new fucking move? No. That's contrived.
Yeah, it is.
That comes from a place where he's responding to the haters who have attacked him for saying the shit that he said publicly. Yeah. Altuve's not dealing with that.
No. Because, I mean, Correa opened his big fat mouth. Anyways. The Astros win game four, so their season lives to fight another day. And Jose Altuve homers again in the first inning. I mean, the bat has never been an issue. There was no real defensive issues in game four. That kind of, you know.
He made the double play.
Yeah. He
executed the double play.
So it's kind of like it's a hit or miss thing. It's not an every night thing with Altuve in terms of his defense. But the thing with Glasnow, and maybe we'll get the chance to ask him about this, but he needs a third pitch. He has the changeup. He never throws it. So when I'm sitting there watching Glasnow,
it's a moot pitch for his mix.
Yeah, like when I'm watching him and the at bat to George Springer. So I feel like. When Glasnow goes through the lineup for the first time, yeah, he gives up the homer to Altuve, but that first time through the lineup is a breeze for him. That's pretty easy. And then once he starts to see lineups for the second and third time, and all you're really dealing with is fastball curveball, if you can't throw that curveball for a strike, and this is what happened, I believe, in the at-bat with Springer, and you could see other guys at least attempting to do it, they're just going to lay off the curveball. Like, if you have essentially two pitches and you can't throw that second one for a strike, then you have to come to me with the fastball. They were just hunting fastball, and they Springer got it, and he put it in the fucking third deck.
I've already, like, again, let's do some math here. If you throw two pitches, I've got a 50% chance of guessing which one each and every time. From there, if you're struggling to throw one of them for a strike, well, the odds of me being able to pick the pitch you can throw for a strike have just significantly increased. Mm-hmm. And you did that, not me. So I can just watch you as a hitter. And that's exactly what happens. So it's twofold. One, I don't think I can hit the curveball. Should I get to that pitch? So maybe not something I'm offering at initially anyway. Two, I'm not going to just start flailing and shit if I don't have any shot at it. So I'm going to force you into the zone with this. The old number one, put it wherever you want. 101 miles an hour, 5'7" Jose Altuve will pull your ass out of the yard. Like that story is that's a tale as old as time. But what folks just don't seem to be able to figure out is if you can't throw that second one for a strike, that's exactly what these hitters do. They eliminate it altogether. Like, fuck you. Throw three of them in a row for a strike. Because if the third one's anywhere close, I am a big league hitter, and though I don't want to hit that curveball, I might be able to fight it off and have to force you to throw either another one somewhere close, or maybe I get that fastball. And if I get that fastball, I like my chances.
And
that's why I say the slider for him, because the curveball plays to both lefties and righties. The fastball plays to both lefties and righties. Now you're talking about a wipeout pitch for a slider that the righties will run out of bat on, and that with the velocity and movement, the lefties just will never be able to either get to or keep fair. A changeup for him is something that I feel like if a guy is beat, they still might be able to keep their bat in the zone long enough, depending on the movement profile. Is it just a reduction in velocity with some north and south, or is there some depth on this pitch with some east to west lateral movement that can garner weak contact and a swing and miss, depending on how he wants to manipulate it. So that's why I think slider with his arm speed, repeat the grip out front, that could help him.
You would think that an organization like Tampa would go to him. I mean, they're one of the smartest organizations in baseball, and be like, hey, listen, we got you here for a reason. We saw something in you that maybe you didn't see in yourself. And we've got to talk about a third pitch. Because it's not like he just got there last offseason. He's been in the organization for a couple of years now. I don't know how someone doesn't go to him and say, we need to work on your changeup so that you're more confident in it so that you can throw it more. Or we need to develop a slider. It's not even really what pitch it is and what type of movement it has. It's really, can you throw this pitch for a strike? Like, what pitch do you, what third pitch can we add here that you feel comfortable throwing for a strike? That's really all it is.
Well, that's no, so that is not necessarily what you're looking for that third pitch for. That's, you're not trying to go to the third pitch to throw that for a strike if you can't throw your second pitch.
But that's not for a consistent strike. Thing. It's not like he's notorious for not being able to throw the, like, that was just like a game four thing where he wasn't able to throw for a strike.
But the idea is, if that's the point, is when you don't have your best stuff, when they talk about not having your best stuff as a big league pitcher, that doesn't mean that you just, like, I'm not throwing anything for strikes at this point in time. It means there's no finish on your pitch. And yeah, you're probably struggling to locate one, maybe even two of your offerings at that point in time. For him, it's more of a long haul developmental conversation. And that is where high velocity guys, they talk about the changeup and they talk about the split because those are feel pitches. But you put that pitch in that kind of arm and you tell him, don't feel for this. Throw this thing right down the fucking middle. Because what it's going to do is going to be exactly what you're looking for. So don't try to manipulate this. Don't try to turn this changeup over. Don't do that. And that's what that third development pitch is for, is because you need something else to get them off the first two offerings. And that's why you've got to be able to throw those first two for strikes, because the third one that's getting them off the first two, that's the one that has to be somewhat presentable. Otherwise, that one, just like one of the ones you're struggling with, gets eliminated as well. And we're back to square one where they're just sitting on the heater.
So what I'm curious about now is, like, are you just not confident in the changeup because you feel like you can't throw it for a strike? Do you think it's not diving enough at the end? Or is it that there's not enough, I guess, differential between your fastball and your changeup? Because, like, if you look at it year by year, I'm looking at the changeup velocity, 2014, 88.45 miles an hour, to last year, 93.25 miles an hour was his average changeup velocity. And the other thing too is that if he really wanted to take velocity off the changeup, he's got big fucking hands. Just bury that thing in your hand.
I mean,
it's easy for me to say, but that's, you would think as an individual with large hands that the changeup would be an easier pitch for you to add to the repertoire.
There's a reason you grab shit with your fingers and not your palm. That's because you can feel it and you know what you're going to be able to do with that object, whatever it is. If it's just sitting in your palm, you can't manipulate that object. So he can put that all the way back in his hand, like you're saying. But then for him, again, what does that feel like coming out? That's that F word. What is he feeling out of the hand, the fingers? What's going on? That's what he has to develop. That's why they would tell him, put this ball in your hand and throw the fuck out of it. Grab it just like this. Ready? Go. You would show him a grip and you would tell him, find a happy medium. This is where you could start. Like, this is a base grip. this is where it could end up. This is how it could evolve. So how does it feel comfortable for you to hold the ball like this? And from there, you tell him to throw the shit out of it. And you see what it's doing for him. The problem right now, do you think he wants to get beat with a third best inventive pitch in the postseason right now? Absolutely not. So that's why it's not even a conversation to be entertained right now. And only if he finds himself in a comfortable spot where he could get confident and like, well, you know, fuck it. I got a little 4-run lead right now. I got a lefty up, nobody on, 2 outs. Yeah. Let's see what this 1-1 changeup does. And if it's 95 with little to no movement, you probably take that one back to the drawing board. Because there are and the health is also the other thing that I think about when you talk about developing pitches. Do they want to just make sure that he is if it's the fastball curveball that's working, do we want to add another pitch to add some more stress? Or do we want to just ride this thing out? Until Jared, I am no Tyler Glasnow. I pitched in the big leagues my entire career throwing a fastball and a changeup. And I have nowhere near. We're talking 93 mile an hour changeup. That's as good as my best fucking fastball ever. Ever. And I pitched. So it's pot. You can do it with two pitches. You can do it.
So
just got to figure it out.
I truly believe this. I mean, obviously, I am a Tyler Glasnow stan. I'm part of the Tyler Glasnow Swipes Club. So I am coming from a place of bias, believe it or not.
Founding member.
Yeah. But I truly believe that the difference between Glasnow being a leading the majors in strikeouts per nine with a 4 ERA and a Cy Young award is just having a nasty changeup. Like, if he even had an average changeup, he's significantly better. Just because of watching that game last night. Like, you saw what the Astros were doing. And I know that in the postseason last year, he was tipping. So it's like, all right, well, he has two pitches. If the glove's here, it's a fastball. If the glove's here, it's a curveball. All right, well, he wasn't tipping in Game 4 of the ALCS on Wednesday night. But if you're only throwing two pitches and you can't throw that second one, this being the curveball, for a strike, then you just hunt the fastball. And he was throwing 101 miles an hour. But they were on it. So it's really that simple. As if you have that third pitch, now if they're hunting fastball, well, they still got to think about that changeup. Like, I hope I live to see the day that he adds that third pitch, because I think that it will literally make all the difference in the world, and then you will be talking about Glasnow in the same sentence as some of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball.
It could be the difference between us talking about Tyler Glasnow in the future as a dominant starting frontline force or an elite bullpen arm.
Yeah. I mean, he's yeah.
That's like, going to be the difference.
I think he can beat DeGrom good. Like, is that crazy? Like, if he had, and I said before, average. If it's asking for a lot, but if Glasnow has a very good changeup, you're talking about DeGrom type results.
I mean, the stuff is there.
Yeah.
Yeah. The stuff is there. And just listening to him, he has an understanding of why he's getting some of the results he's getting. And that's far more important to me than stuff. Because I want to know that you know why you're hitting the target. I want to know if you understand why you're getting the swings you're getting. And if you do, and you combine it with that stuff, well, that's dangerous. That becomes very, very dangerous.
Whew. We got to talk about Hooters real quick. I think that's probably the move for tonight, Thursday night.
Hoots,
you know, my mom brought me dinner twice this week, so I feel like tonight's probably an off night from the Ellen delivery. dinner delivery. So I feel like I'll probably just do Hooters delivery, and I believe it's free. And we'll find out in a couple of seconds here, because Hooters is back for 2020 as presenting sponsors of the Sportsbook House in Philly. And we couldn't be more excited about that. They are our only choice for wings and the perfect partner for all the sports this fall. Hooters has new curbside pickup and delivery options in most locations nationwide. It's called Hooters on the Fly. Whew. You can order online or in the Hooters app. With curbside, you can safely stay in your car and they'll bring the food out to you. And for anyone not wanting to leave their house, Hooters is now doing free delivery. There it is. Free delivery just in time for football season, the Major League Baseball postseason. Just order online in the Hooters app. Get all your favorite wings and sides without leaving your house. Again, you got to go. You can order online or in the Hooters app. Get all your favorite wings and sides without leaving your house, and you use the promo code STOOL, STOOL, for $10 off any order over $30. Again, that is promo code STOOL for $10 off any order over $30. Shout out to Hooters.
Mobile Hooters. That's like it's like Dolly Parton on a skateboard. Yeah. Mobile Hooters.
Some tweets since we last were together, Dallas. This one from, I think his last name's Hawk. Brian Hawk. Aaron Boone said, quote, "I think it's important to realize how close we are to winning a World Series."
This year?
That was kind of my response. Was I was like, well, you can make the case that you're not anywhere close to winning a World Series. Like, you couldn't be further from winning a World Series at this juncture.
They're literally as close as I am.
And I don't want to get too much into it because we kind of did. I'm sure as we go on and actually get past the World Series and we start the offseason, we'll probably do some offseason forecasting for teams that we foresee having a heightened sense of activity in the offseason. Mm-hmm. The Yankees will obviously be one of them. Mm-hmm. And we've already kind of discussed this, I think, on the last episode or the one before that, about the free agents that the Yankees have coming up, the players that might be available to them. And, yeah, I just don't agree. Like, you're taking – the way that I see this, and this is an unbiased take, as you know.
Always.
In 2019, the Yankees lost in the ALCS. In 2020, they lost in the Division Series. So they're – you're taking a step back, and then from 2020 to 2021, I don't know that there'll be a better team than the team that lost in the Division Series. Like, you
like potential to get worse.
The potential is for sure there, because the only way you can get better is if you retain DJ LeMahieu. So that's just retaining what you already had. Retaining Tanaka. Again, bringing back what you already had. And maybe signing Trevor Bauer, but I don't think that's going
to
happen.
Well, before that even happens, let's just remember. So they're going to have to spend significant money to stay as good as they are right now.
A team that failed to get back to the American League Championship Series.
So yes, Yankees fans, as you sit today, you do not have DJ LeMahieu on your team. You do not have Masahiro Tanaka.
No,
on your team,
Paxton.
So as we sit today, you are worse off than you were the day of your last baseball game. So to think that you're just going to be better than you were this year, there's obviously some work to do. And we just laid out two acquisitions that would need to be made to
maintain.
Just stay as good. And let's remember, another year older, another year around the sun, unless you're in a bottle of wine, I don't know how well that plays.
Yeah. So, and I don't know what else there is to do for the Yankees beyond Trevor Bauer. Like, do you just run it back with this group and be like, well, we're a good team that just ran up against a better team, and you just hope other teams get worse?
Why is Marcus Stroman's not thrown in there with Trevor Bauer's? The way it is.
Because Trevor Bauer is better.
Significantly better?
Yeah.
Significantly? You think significantly better? The production is significantly better? Because that's not true.
I mean, Marcus Stroman's a nice three. Trevor Bauer's an ace. He's a Cy Young Award winner. I think the gap is sizable between the two.
Based on recent production, I don't think it's that big of a gap.
I would say that's the only way that the gap is big.
There's a difference.
You're looking at a broader sample.
There's a difference.
Yeah, I mean, like with Stroman, you're getting a 200 inning guy. If everything goes well, you're getting a 200 inning guy, and that's huge value. But it's like, what do those innings look like? Like he's yet to be consistent the way that Bauer is yet to be consistent.
Sure. Well, I'm just merely asking why Trevor Bauer is far and away, based on, I think, conversations that I hear, like Stroman is almost an afterthought when it comes to free agents that are available on the mound. It's like Bauer. Oh yeah, well, Marcus Stroman. And then you take a look at some of those numbers and you're like, well, I mean, there's a difference here. There's one guy who's performed better, and that's obvious. But is it just like we're just not even having that conversation about this guy?
It is recency bias, that's what I'm asking. Trevor Bauer, in a short season, pitched him way into an elite category, whereas Marcus Stroman opted out. Like that, I think Marcus Stroman cost himself hype by not pitching this season.
Oh well, there's no debate in that.
If it's flip flopped, right? Like, you know, if Trevor Bauer opts out of this season because of an injury or COVID or whatever, people are still talking about last year. Like, he got traded to the Reds and he wasn't really that great after that. And the potential is there, sure, but like we haven't seen it over a full 162, and we still haven't. Like, like mentally, we're like, oh yeah, like he's gonna win the Cy Young Award, so he was nasty for a whole season, but it was one third of a season. And right. Yeah, so Bauer bought himself a lot of hype, whereas I think Stroman cost himself a lot of hype. But yeah, I think that there's at least like a notable gap between the two. But I'm not saying that like if your team ends up with Marcus Stroman, you're instantly a better team. But if you are a team in the market for an ace, I don't know that Stroman is getting the ace label from any front office, whereas Bauer is for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm trying to look at their career numbers here. I didn't log in on my fucking thing here. But Bauer's got, like, 300 or 400 more career innings, I think, right? Mm-hmm. Somewhere around there. Like, 1,100 something. But I agree that there's no favors done for Stroman by not playing. But that, again, that's not the conversation, or not the question that I bring up. It was more about, I just don't ever hear, like, if Stroman's a fallback plan or a fallback option, is that a bad fallback plan? Like, if you're the New York Yankees and you're looking at locking down Trevor Bauer and you don't get Trevor Bauer and Marcus Stroman is what you get, are you disappointed?
No. I think if you're the New York Yankees, I think that's where I'm coming from here. Like,
and that's what I was getting at is why Bauer's name for you initially there and not a Stroman.
My brain is conditioned to think. I mean, Steinbrenner is dead, but the Steinbrenner mentality still exists, where it's like, we spent this money on Gerrit Cole. We got eliminated in the fucking division series. Well, now who's the best available option? Because that's what we're going to go get. Like, that's been the Yankees mentality forever, where if they fail to win a World Series, and I know that hasn't, like, that whole thing, like, it's not the 90s anymore. It's not the 90s anymore. So, like, the Yankees, like, getting there, winning, or getting there and losing, whatever. Like, that, it's not that anymore. But that has been their MO. Is if we fail and we fail greatly, then we spend, and that's the.
So when has that worked? When's the last time that worked?
They won.
Okay, so we've gone a decade now where that hasn't worked, and then we get into the little Bauer-Cole relationship. Blah, blah. All I'm saying is I can understand why people are salivating over Trevor Bauer and why there is hype around Trevor Bauer right now. And I can appreciate all of that. All I'm saying is let's just not forget about other guys that are out there that can get that job done as well. Marcus Stroman is one of those guys.
I'm with you to some degree. Like, I definitely – my stance is that there is a notable gap between Bauer and Stroman. But
– yeah, there's a difference. There's absolutely a difference.
Especially from, like, the postseason pedigree now. Like, where Bauer just shoved it up the Braves' ass and – like taking the ball on short rest, like stuff like that. Like, he's built different.
Mm-hmm.
He's built different. And I don't know, like, if I'm the Yankees and, like, I have Gerrit Cole, like, I don't need, I mean, of course you'd like to have Bauer, but it's like, if you bring back Tanaka and add Stroman, and then Luis Severino is a name that we haven't mentioned yet, where, like, Severino comes back from TJ and he's blowing 100, like, he's your own version of a Glasnow. That's one of those things where it's like, okay, we get back Luis Severino, and he was at the first half of 2018 was Cy Young frontrunner type shit. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
So that's in there. And you acquire that talent without having to pay anybody or give anything up in return. Like, you just get that back. So that is something that also needs to be considered in all of this. Where, do you need an ace? It'd be nice to have one, but do you need one? No, you got Gerrit Cole. So if Marcus Stroman ends up in the Bronx, I think that's probably the move, right?
That's where I'm leaning. I'm honestly, yep.
And I think he would embrace.
That's where I'm leaning.
The environment. I think he would embrace the fan base.
Yeah, and if it's the Yankees making a decision between Bauer's media company and Stroman, they don't have to worry about that with Stroman.
I honestly think it's Bauer making the decision between his media company and the Yankees. You know, like, the Yankees might be like, well, we don't want this guy in here because of what he's going to be doing content-wise. Bauer himself might be like, well, I don't really know if I want to sign with the Yankees because of the limitations that are going to be on my media company.
For sure. And that is that's baseball in 2020.
Yeah.
Right? That legitimately, like, one guy could be eliminating suitors because of what he does, quote unquote, so off the field.
Let me ask you this, Dallas, because I was just thinking about this last night. Do you think Trevor Bauer, unless a team really ponies up financially, do you think Trevor Bauer is less considering Florida spring training teams because of momentum? Like, the fact that, like, if he's like, hey, if I'm in Arizona, I can make, like, he has, like, the fucking, the momentum house, he's got Bauer Bites, and it's so easy to get players in and out of there, and he's making all this content that lasts him until the end of the year, versus you've seen how shitty it is to do Florida spring training, and, like, I don't know what becomes of his content in Florida.
All that?
Yeah.
What's that money say? What's that money say?
It's not going to be my answer.
What does that contract look like?
You know that he cares about being able to make content in spring training.
To what extent? What's the old saying? Everybody's got a price tag. Everybody's got a price tag. Just got to show me yours. We'll get there. We'll get there. I just got to, like, we're either going to find out what you're not willing to take, or we're going to find out what you're willing to take. That's how those negotiations go, right? How's $10? Nope. $15. Nope. 18. 20. I'm in.
I guess.
That's how that goes.
Yeah.
It's at what point, because Trevor will then decide, okay, you know what? I can hire a couple guys and they can bang out the media type stuff that I'm looking to achieve if I am out here in Florida and I can't be the extension of momentum that I am when I'm in Arizona. That's fine. Maybe I just hire a couple guys to, you know, keep doing what they're doing for momentum. Maybe that's the route we go. Like, who knows? So those are conversations that he'll have with himself. But if Trevor Bauer is genuinely the baseball lover, then all of the momentum stuff will take a backseat to him playing where he wants, having the opportunity to win a World Series. That's where the shit or get off the pot moment will lie, is we can bring momentum and you can have this, or momentum's going to stay in the fucking backseat, bud, and you're going to come up here and you're going to play, and this is what we're going to do, and this is what we'll pay you to do it, and this is what the future looks like here. Thoughts?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I think it matters. To your point, he can have both. Like, if you're the Padres, you are open to it. Like, you also have awesome personalities in that clubhouse.
That he would just blow up for
you. He would, like, you want momentum. Like, you want a guy like to come in and be like, hey, look at what we got over here. Like, now you can make our other guys some, you know, front-facing superstars. And we also have a chance to win the World Series. You like that? And we got your buddy Mike Clevinger. You like that? Like, if I'm Trevor Bauer, I'm just going to the Padres being like, yo, let's me help you.
All I know about the Reds, what I know about the Reds and how they like to handle things like that, very head-scratching that Trevor Bauer and momentum were able to create a home. We're able to create a symbiotic relationship, if you will, between momentum and the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of surprised me, because there are organizations out there who they're just not here for it. They don't want it. Like, they'll even go as far as to call you and make sure you got the message. Like, just want to confirm for you, don't call us. Oh, okay. Mm. Okay. And now you got a player like that? Like, that can't set well with organization X, right?
Yeah, X. X being the Reds. Cool. Yeah. It is weird how that works. So we'll see. Pedro Gomez tweeted, Zach Greinke. This is a quote from Zach Greinke. Quote, for me, it's nice not having fans in the stands, because there's no one trying to talk to you and ask for autographs and wanting to take pictures and all that stuff. I don't like any of that stuff. Just an honest... I mean, if you were to cover up the name and be like, who said this? Zach Greinke.
Right.
Yeah, you don't. I mean, that's...
Yeah. And I don't know, like, are we getting into a weird point? Like, look, I understand... Whoa, you know, the headspace the guy is in when he's on the mound. I understand how he likes to go about life. You're not going to get any judgment from me here. I can, you know, do your thing. At what point in time do we, like, can we be okay with that? Or, like, do we have to continue to acknowledge this? Is this something that we have to continue to, like, I don't know if celebrate is the right word, but I think just an acknowledgement, like, oh, man, did you hear what Zach Greinke said? He confirmed again in just a slightly different way that he doesn't like people and would rather not hang out at a baseball field and do all of the other shit. Like, is that, were you shocked?
No,
I wasn't.
I think baseball fans, I mean, I would say, I don't know.
Like, this story is tired for me. Like, I don't, like, okay, great. Like, you're right. Like he can't say anything else in a different way that's going to move the earth for me. Like you've been very vocal about not wanting to take pictures and sign autographs and talk to people. And, like, we get it from your post-game interviews. And we all understand that there's a level of, you know, levity there. There's a level of comic relief involved as well. We all get that. Like, I don't need fucking 5 more years of Zach Greinke not wanting to sign your baseball stories. I just don't. Like, it's tired for me. And that's not a knock on him at all. I'm not saying him saying these things or doing these. Just, like, can we quit putting a microphone in front of his face and thinking that when he says something like this, it's like, oh, man, Greinke's at it again. No, he's being Zach, and you asked him the same fucking question that 40 people have asked him.
I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I'm not saying I want more of it, but I do get a kick out of it because I can relate. Like, that's... I mean, I definitely don't have, like, the same brain as Zach Greinke, but I think, like, the whole, like, enjoying isolation thing is relatable for me.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to have to stop you right there. Because you want to know what you do after games are played in Boston?
Yeah, I go meet with people.
Voluntarily. And you're not paid or compensated in anything other than high fives, likes, and retweets, and clicks on the blog. That's how you're paid for that interaction. Zach Greinke is, to an extent, paid through a paycheck because that money, blah, 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 we get in. But after a certain point, he's like, look, I don't have to fucking sign your autograph. I don't have to come out here early to do that. I'm not going to because I don't like to do that. So you have the option every home game in Boston to get on the train and go about your business. You choose not to do that. You choose to actively be available to people who enjoy your content. That is the very opposite of what Zach Greinke is doing. He is telling you how much he likes not having to be available to the people who enjoy his content. So I can't let you tell me that you're similar in that regard. To an extent, yes, you are. And I understand that. But that's a dude who is like, you guys are very different in that regard.
Yeah,
very
I think different. It's more like the example that you're using, like after games, like that's still work to me where it's like you are making yourself available to the people that consume your content because you're building those relationships with people and you're giving them experiences that will only make them enjoy it that much more because there's like a personal connection versus what he's talking about. Like when he's out and about, and I mean, like he obviously, I can't imagine he does very many autograph signings. Like that's a dude that just, he's not signing up for it in the same way. Yeah. Like he's never opening himself up to that ever.
Right. And the interaction that you have with your PR group on your team when they want you to go and meet sponsors, they want you to do a little 15-minute meet and greet with season ticket holders or whatever. Those are the opportunities that a guy like Zach would probably say, no, thank you. And that is the paradigm that exists where you kind of do have to do that stuff. As a player, as a star player especially, you kind of do have to make yourself available for the organization who's paying you to do these things, blah, blah, blah. But if a guy didn't want to do it, he doesn't want to do it. And if he's not going to do it, he's not going to do it. You're not going to drag him in there to do it. So I don't know how those conversations go, but I would bet that if there's like a minimum of 3 public appearances that you have to do a season, Zach is not doing 4.
No. I mean, and I know that you say that it's tired, but for me, it's just, I find him so interesting that he can.
Yeah. Like I said,
if you're asking him the same questions over and over and over again, then yeah, like it's, you're baiting him into giving you a response that it's like, aha, tell the joke again, tell the joke again. But like for Greinke, right.
That's what this is.
It's not because it's I haven't heard him speak about the dynamic of no fans.
Well, then maybe that's the difference because I've heard him say it like, you know, in interviews and shit like that for the post game for the A's. Like we've talked about in the broadcast. Like I watched him the game that he pitched. He went to the mound and then sat in the stands by himself, not in the dugout in between innings. To talk to his catcher, to talk to his teammates, to whatever. He didn't do that. He sat in the stands by himself and then walked out of the stands onto the pitcher's mound, pitched his inning, and then walked back and sat on the stands or sat in the stands. So like and the, you know, him sitting down Native American style while the mound was being fixed because he had them come out there and like that right there. That's not tired. That's funny. That's his mindset. Like, I'm not going to stand around right here. This could be a while. I'll just fucking take a seat. It's a great visual. It's funny to see. I'm just saying it's almost like the media is using the Greinke anxiety stuff and the Greinke like lack of desire to be forward facing as a crutch in a time like this. Like, oh, I need a story. I need a soundbite. I need something. I know Greinke not liking people is always going to play. So let me make my way over to Zach's locker. Like, fuck for what? What are you going to ask right now? Like, you're just looking for a funny quip is all you're looking for. And that's, for me, that's tired. Leave the fucking guy alone.
Bruce Levine tweeted, numerous sources have told me that Tony La Russa is seriously looking forward to conversations with the White Sox brass about the job. Sox have asked for and received okay from the Angels to proceed. Bob Nightingale first to report that. La Russa is on the top of analytics side as well. The White Sox.
Pray for the rib cage of every hitter in the AL Central.
I don't even think we mentioned that because in the last
Tony La Russa,
that Rick Renteria got fired and they're looking for a new manager. And I think there was one quote that came out of the White Sox camp where they said something like, we're looking for a manager that has experience winning championships somewhat recently, and I'm paraphrasing there, but that's what they said. Like, we want like a manager that's won like a championship fairly recently. So obviously all the trolls come out and they're like, oh, it's Alex Cora. He was talking about AJ Hinch. He certainly wasn't talking about John Farrell. So I think it's going to be AJ Hinch who ends up there on the south side. Alex Cora is going back to Boston. You can't convince me otherwise. That's going to be a thing. But yeah, I think you can interview Tony La Russa and he can be super excited about it. And it's an interesting name. And, you know, it obviously has to be a serious candidate if you're asking the Angels for permission to do it, to go to that length. If you were the White Sox, Dallas, which guy are you going with? If you're trying to take this core, like this young group, because I don't know,
AJ Hinch.
I don't know if La Russa's style of managing does not fit. Like you, because I think it's almost like I look at you know, when the Red Sox went with Bobby Valentine after Terry Francona. It's like, well, you know, we need to like tighten this shit up over here. It's like, no, you don't have to do that with the White Sox. Like, you need to like let them be what they are.
Well, and so Tony, look at the teams he's managed, right? The Cardinals, but he was in Chicago very early on in his career, and then to Oakland, that kind of team, that kind of atmosphere, like those boys, those guys in Oakland, they had a good time. They had a great time. And Tony had to not control that, but he had to have a ruling thumb over that to some extent. And I don't know what the reception is going to be like when he sees fucking Eloy out in left field with his jersey unbuttoned to his navel and his hat damn
falling
near backwards.
Sands.
Like, you know, is he going to process Eloy swimming around in that fucking left field net like a damn trapped tuna? And think he's dicking around, like not taking himself seriously. And does that conversation not go smoothly to where that sort of disrupts how Eloy starts to prepare and how confident he is? And there's a lot of those things that I think you have to pay attention to, that you have to get answers to before you bring in a guy who, how is the oldest player on the White Sox?
Like Jose Abreu, like 31.
And how old is Tony?
He's got to be in his 70s, right?
70-something? So, those relationships can work.
He's 76.
But
holy shit.
Is the man who... Right, he's 3 years younger than my grandmother. So, it's basically, can my grandma understand what Eloy is doing out there in left field, what Abreu's doing with his 46 chains, what, you know... Can you understand that? Do you under and Tony? Yes, Tony will get that. How he operates with them is the difference.
That's a hard pass for me. I mean, it's tough because I don't know that this group of White Sox players that are young and exciting and fun, like, you know.
They benefit from a fun uncle being the manager as opposed to a strict grandfather. And that's what Tony might represent, is that grandfather presence as opposed to that fun uncle
and
presence.
And with AJ Hinch, it's like, you know, you got something going here. It's a young, likable baseball team. And when fans are back in the stands, anytime like AJ Hinch comes out to take like a pitcher out of the game, he's going to get the shit booed out of him in every single ballpark. And it's just like, it's not, I don't know. Is it fair to call that a dark cloud over the White Sox? Like, does it make people who otherwise would have rooted for the White Sox not want to root for them now? I'm not saying White Sox fans. I'm talking about like people like me that are outside the market. I personally don't give a fuck. Like, I'm not going to not root for the White Sox because of Hinch.
No, because
there,
if
there
you,
are people
right,
that because, fucking despise the Astros for what happened.
Sure.
That will hate all of those individuals no matter what jersey they wear for the rest of their lives. So there is going to be some element of that for sure.
And the only thing you would do is go back and, if you're trying to give AJ Hinch the benefit of the doubt, you listen to him tell you about how many times he kicked the monitors, sort of addressing the situation, wanting things to be different. And from there, you make your decision on how much effort was made from AJ to put a stop to what was going on. You can count his moral bank account all you want. I'm not here to do that. So that's where that decision gets made by a fan organization, fan base. Like, are you okay with the individual? Same thing that's going to be asked about Alex Cora. Same thing that's going to be asked about any of those other guys that you think about bringing onto your team or whatever. Just look, time is going to heal. Maybe not for everybody, but when it comes to figuring out whether or not these guys are employable, time has essentially already healed.
Yeah. We'll see. Because I think it's going to be Hinch. I'd be very, very surprised if it was La Russa, who I have a lot of respect for. I just don't think that that's the right fit for this group moving forward. Dallas, final thoughts.
No. Nothing.
Rays close it out tonight. Gravity. Game five.
I would like to think so.
I don't think they've announced stars yet.
If they don't, that could be trouble.
You think so? I don't think so.
Yeah, man. Because I feel like the Astros lineup can do damage. They can click. They can build innings.
You know.
I bore witness to that. Sure did.
Front row seat to that. Which is
right here on my couch.
Yeah, I was there with you. Yeah. Good to see that.
Do you have any final thoughts?
It's over tonight. It's over tonight. Rays clinching game five. Thanks for coming out, Houston. And I'm looking at those off days that the Tampa Bay Rays will have leading up to the World Series, and I'm thinking, well, there's some guys that we could probably squeeze in starting nine interviews with. If, you know,
2 to 3, did we just go raise heavy?
Why not? I mean, we've got guys. We had Soroka on.
Soroka.
Some individuals with the Dodgers. Probably a lot, really. I mean, I don't even think we ran the interview with Max Muncy from spring training, did we?
I thought
I can't
we did.
Remember. I don't fucking know anything anymore. I have no clue. Jay Hay would know. But he's busy doing the fucking. There's like a, back in his hometown, they do like a kind of like a fall fair, where they have, you know, like the little arts and crafts stuff, and there's an exhibit of bees there.
And they were trying. I believe he and Allie were a late entry to the to the apple stem tying contest as well. So you pick the apples, your whole bushel, I guess. You then remove each stem and tie them together in a four knot, and it's whoever can do the longest.
He's super competitive. They're practicing.
He is. It's fucking crazy. And then I think second round you have to do it with your tongue, which
but
is
he's
even
good at that.
Yeah. So, oh, buddy. Like if it's me, Jay Hay, my dog, and a jar of peanut butter, I'll tell my dog to go lay down.
Like that sounds like a party right there.
It gets nuts.
All right, we got fucking ALCS Game 5, NLCS Game 4 coming up tonight. Join us on the stream. We'll be streaming for these games.
Holler.
Shout out to the chat. We're reading everything you guys say. We're responding. We're engaging. So if you want to come hang out with us, come hang out with us later tonight. And we'll be back on Monday, probably Monday. I feel like we'll have a pretty clear picture of what the World Series is going to be like by Monday. Yeah.
We should.
See you then.
Until then.